the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom. For those stations who may have joined us down the line, we're anticipating a press conference starting any minute now. This conference under the banner of the Valdez, or the city of Cordova. They are in Valdez, but it is representatives of the Cordova City Council, members of the Cordova business community, representatives of CDFU, the Cordova District Fishermen United, and PISWAC, the Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation. PISWAC is the organization that operates the hatcheries that are threatened by the spill of oil through southwest Prince William Sound. The conference will be underway in just a moment. We'd like to take this opportunity to advise listeners that continuing coverage of the Exxon Valdez oil spill and cleanup has been made possible in part by an emergency grant to KCHU from the City of Valdez and by listener contributions. This broadcast is being made possible through the facilities of KCHU and the Alaska Public Radio Network in cooperation with Alascom. Later on today, we're anticipating hearing Rear Admiral Ed Nelson, who's the Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard 17th District. That's all of Alaska. Ed Nelson has been the third member of the triumvirate of Exxon, DEC, and the Coast Guard that has been the coordinating committee, management committee, for the cleanup efforts through day 16 now of the Exxon Valdez oil spill incident. Ed Nelson, this will be the first time the Coast Guard will have come before the press here in Alaska since President George Bush's announcement yesterday of an increased federal role in the cleanup response here in Prince William Sound. We understand there have been some initial surveys and overflights by various military personnel looking at how best to utilize military forces and assets in the cleanup. And of course, there are a number of questions that have been raised whether or not military personnel will be used to replace potentially locally hired Alaskans. The conference is now getting underway here in the Valdez Civic Center.
We flew from Cordova this morning. I'm Heather McCarty. I'm from Cordova. Heather McCarty from Cordova. M-C-C-A-R-T-Y.
Thank you.
We're all from Cordova. We flew over here this morning because in our separate dealings with the press, we've all recognized the need for Cordova's needs to be addressed in a unified way. And we have quite a representative sampling here of the different parts of the Cordova community, and we're all going to make statements concerning our separate needs. I'm going to be the moderator. I'd like to ask that we allow each person to speak and then have all the questions at the end. We'll begin with Don Moore, who is the city manager of the city of Cordova. Don?
Heather McCarty was the moderator introducing Don Moore, city manager of Cordova.
The city of Cordova is fearful of becoming the forgotten city in this tragedy. We were not mentioned in the $1 million-plus advertising campaign that the company mounted throughout nationwide newspapers after this tragedy. And more importantly to us, the city of Cordova was not invited to testify at congressional hearings that were held earlier this week in the Coast Guard subcommittee of the House Merchant Marine Committee. Working through my personal contacts in Washington, D.C., I was able to get a statement on behalf of the people of Cordova to be read into the record of that hearing. And I would like for the people of Alaska to also hear that statement this morning. This was the statement of Donald L. Moore, city manager of City of Cordova, Alaska. The people of Cordova, Alaska, are privileged to live and work in one of the two most beautiful places on earth, the formerly pristine Prince William Sound. As the world now knows, on March 24, 1989, the fully loaded tanker Exxon Valdez hit a well-marked reef near Bligh Island and spewed 10.5 million gallons of crude oil into the Sound. We are now experiencing a catastrophe of unprecedented impact on our environment, our economy, and our way of life. Most unfortunately, the impact is worse than it needs to be because we trusted those who profess to know how to triage their own negligence. In the early phase of the spill, we in Cordova expected Exxon to mobilize to clean up the spill and begin assisting Cordova and other sound communities with the recovery efforts. The truth is that the people of Cordova reached into their own treasury and began cleaning up the spill and protecting uncontaminated areas of the sound while Exxon helped its out-of-town experts react. It is not a joke that the inevitable souvenir t-shirts were deployed before the containment boom was around the Exxon Valdez. In our view, Exxon has mustered only a fraction of its available resources to clean up the spill. The city of Cordova and the two villages in the sound are totally dependent upon commercial and subsistence fishing for our existence. Cordova's annual operating budget depends on direct program revenues from commercial fishing for one-third to one-half of our operating revenue. Indirectly, the entire city economy is supported by fishing. In 1987, Cordova, a town of 3,000 persons, was the ninth largest fishing port by value in the United States. We have no pipeline terminal or tour ship industry to offset any loss of our basic industry. On April 3, 1989, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced that our herring fishing days were over. The impact of the spill on the salmon fishery is uncertain. The Exxon Valdez disaster threatens a number of public, private, economic development projects for Cordova, such as our dock and gurry line, our fish processing construction, harbor improvements, and other public works projects such as bonding for our elementary school construction. We also greatly fear the socioeconomic displacements that will afflict our community as a result of this tragedy. The loss of jobs, the loss of the way of life, and all the attendant expectations of perhaps a generation of Cordovans are at risk. The people are afraid and they are frustrated. I will assume for now that Exxon will be driven by fundamental fairness to honor its pronouncements to make us whole. And I appeal to the world to watch. I referred to Prince William Sound as one of the two most beautiful places on earth. I leave it to each of you individually to decide what the other one is. We all have a special Shangri-La in our hearts and minds. Think of yours when you contemplate what is happening to ours. Thank you.
That was Don Moore, city manager of the city of Cordova. Here's Heather McCarty again.
Thank you, Don. We'll now hear from Bruce Suzumoto, who's the president of the Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation. Bruce?
Certainly. It's S-U-Z-U-M-O-T-O.
Thank you.
Bruce? First of all, I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to come here to be with us today. We felt it was real important that we let people know what is happening in Cordova because we feel that Cordova, as Don has mentioned earlier, has become a forgotten city in the eyes of many people. The Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation, which is what I work for, is a private nonprofit corporation founded by commercial fishermen in 1974. And it was formed primarily to enhance the salmon fisheries resources here in the Sound. We operate three hatcheries presently in the Prince William Sound, including the Armin F. Koenig hatchery at Port San Juan, which has been the recent focus of the Battle of Sawmill Bay, which probably people have been hearing a lot about here. The Prince William Sound has five world-class salmon hatchery facilities. Together, they have a combined total of almost three-quarters of a billion salmon eggs, their capacity. The Esther Island hatchery, which we run, has a produces about 300 million salmon fry each year. Why the hatchery system is so important to the communities around the Sound and the fishermen, last year a full 50% of their revenue was generated from the Sound's hatcheries. In 1989, it is projected that $50 million will be generated, or it was projected that $50 million would be generated from the salmon facilities. Commercial fishermen support the hatcheries via a 2% tax, which they have assessed on themselves. And also, we sell fish to support our $13.4 million hatchery budget. During the last 2 weeks, we've been attempting to protect our hatcheries from the oil spilled from the Exxon Valdez. And we've concentrated on the hatchery at Sawmill Bay at Port San Juan because the 120 million fry which are emerging from there are and remain in the most immediate danger. The Exxon Corporation has provided financial and material assistance to us, and we want to thank them for that. We also are very thankful of our staff, the DEC and CDFU for their tremendous help in protecting the hatcheries. Unfortunately, however, as you know, that we've been aided by unusually good weather conditions out here, unusually pleasant weather, and that's what we're not sure if we can maintain the same situations which we've had at our facilities. These are our immediate concerns. A cleanup of the oil on the water is the first priority. I want to emphasize that none of the hatcheries or any of the sea life in the Sound is safe until all the water, all the oil has been removed from the water. In addition, cleaning of the mouths of the rivers and streams must occur immediately. Salmon will be returning in May, and valuable spawning habitat has already been impacted. Next, research must be also implemented immediately to assess the magnitude of this oil spill. Water quality testing must be done. The out-migrating fry must be monitored. We also must look at the oil's effect on the planktonic communities here that have been impacted, which are the basis of the entire food web here out in the Sound. Returning adults and their spawning habitat must also be tested. Finally, once this research has been collected and analyzed, a program of rehabilitation must be undertaken. This rehabilitation will probably be costly and would take a long period of time to complete. This may include planting fry into the damaged streams or the construction of new hatchery facilities to mitigate some of the damage. This mitigation program must be implemented as soon as the impact of the oil spill has been determined. So this will allow the fishery to recover in a timely manner and also to relieve some of the financial impact on the local economies. Finally, I just want to personally thank everyone who has aided us in this in the protection of our hatcheries, and it's been a tremendous effort from a lot of different people. But I want you to realize and understand that this is just this immediate response is only the beginning, and there are a long-term effects to this oil spill. Thank you.
Bruce Tsuzumoto, the president of PSWAC. Here's Heather
Next,
McCarty again.
Next, we'll hear from Bob Van Brocklin, who is a business person from Cordova. Bob?
D-A-N-B-R-O-C-K-L-I-N. I polled some of my fellow businessmen yesterday to see what their concerns are. I talked to their employees. I talked to their consumers. And the general consensus is they know, I mean, we are fish. No fish, no business, no Cordova, no economy. People are concerned. They don't know if we're going to be taken care of. I mean, the herring fishery was declared closed 5 days ago. Has a cannery worker been reimbursed? I mean, it's a very simple, easy claim. What did you make last year? You're not going to work this year. That hasn't been done. The only claims that are available, I know Exxon's advertising the claims office. I know the people very well. I've been down there. They will give some advances to fishermen. They have not broken the fisherman barrier. They're compiling information on businesses, but they aren't making any decisions. Basically, how do you play their game if you don't know the rules? The people of Cordova don't know the rules, what their plan is, what their project, what they're going to do. It's just total fear and chaos there. The consumer public, they don't know where their next dollar is coming from. Are they going to purchase anything? So the economy is, right now, is a standstill. Normally this time of year, we'd have herring processing boats there, fishermen waiting to go herring fishing. Now it's a reverse effect of that. Most of the people are out fighting the oil spill. They don't know where their next income is coming from, how long it's going to take to deal, what's the policy, from the fisherman down to the cannery worker. I mean, the cannery worker seems like a simple claim. The man's not going to work for 30 days till red season. He worked last year. Is that hard to settle? That's the concern of Cordova on the economic side. It's just, it's fear. People are asking, you know, will I be here next year? Should I quit my job now, go out and work on the oil spill? Because I'm not sure if I'm going to have a job here. It's just the concern for their families, their way of life. And I just can't believe it can't be rectified. Everyone says they're going to take care of us. I mean, I've been to the press conferences. I've seen it on TV. They say we're going to take care of you, but no one's done it. I was in the claims office here yesterday in Valdez. Flew over from Cordova, took it upon myself to go there, asked what the rules are. They said they were going to send claim people to Cordova. They did. They sent one down. But there still has been no cut-and-dried policy. I mean, you have hundreds of cannery workers that aren't going to work. It's cut-and-dried. When are they going to cross the line from the primary claim to a secondary claim? That's my question. I mean, you should come to Cordova, get yourself a cannery worker, go to room 204 at the Reluctant Fisherman, the Exxon claim office, and see if this man gets paid. Or see what their procedure is. I challenge you to do that. We need some answers in Cordova. We need them now. We have a negative cash flow, and that's what the economy works on. There's nothing else there. We've had a slight impact for some businesses with the media coming through and stuff like this. We know that's very temporary. Once this news event slides, that's over with. That's our economy right now. The media on our disaster. We need some long-term plans. We need to know where we're coming from, what we're doing, how we're going to exist. Thank you. Dan Brocklin. Bob.
This is Bob Van Brocklin, a businessman from Cordova. He's a retailer there.
Let's hold the question. Press conference, please. Next, I'd like to introduce Michelle Hahn O'Leary. She's representing CDFU. She's the chairperson of the Herring Pound Division. Okay.
This is Heather McCarty, who is introducing Michelle Hahn O'Leary, who is the chair of the Herring Pound Division or Committee of CDFU. The Herring Pound fishery being the herring roe fishery that was canceled earlier this month by State Department of Fish and Game.
United, which is CDFU. If it weren't for the oil spill, Michelle, right now, would be out on the Sound working her herring pound. But today she's here with us to explain the feelings of the fishermen. Michelle? Good morning. a lot of you have seen me before. I've been talking on these issues now for several days, actually since the spill began. One point that I'd like to make right away is that as fishermen, we represent ourselves, but more importantly, we represent the environment that we live in. And as fishermen, we are not just fishermen. We are professionals in our field. And this profession requires us that we know the local area and the local environment. We have to know the winds, the tides, the currents. We have to know where the fish are, what they do, and where they're moving. We are professionals here in Prince William Sound. We've developed a working relationship since this spill began with Exxon, Alyeska, the DEC, and other state and federal agencies. This relationship has been beneficial, I think, both to them and to us because we've been able to get our concerns out. However, we did not spill Exxon's oil. We did not spill Exxon's oil to create jobs for ourselves. We had jobs. And let me tell you, all of us like them a lot better than what we're doing now. And most of all, we do not wear Exxon's hat. We do this because we love our lifestyle. We're helping to clean up this spill because we love our environment. Yesterday, Mr. Irasi, at his press conference, stated that he had 110 boats in Exxon's Navy. I'd like to clarify that a little bit. Some of you reporters asked him later, and he said, well, 30 of the boats were hired from Cordova. I'd like to set that straight. There are currently 64 seiners and 15 gill netters out on the Sound working now on this spill. They aren't all hired by Exxon because Exxon never took the time to get a proper contract out to any of them. Our own fishermen have chased Exxon from Valdez to Cordova and back again, tracking down a contract and flying it out to our fishermen personally yesterday so that they could be officially on this spill. We also have numerous skiffs and people that are working on the Bartlett and the Aurora and also at the hatcheries. We estimate that we have 250 Cordovans working on the spill right now. If you recall Mr. Irasi's notes of how many people were out in the field, that pretty much corresponds with the number of Cordovans out in the field. These fishermen and these workers are confused and they're worried. Exxon has said repeatedly that they will pay our bills, that they will reimburse us for our claims. Yet not one fisherman has been paid a dime in Cordova. They're beginning to run up big bills at the grocery stores and at the fuel dock, and they're beginning to wonder if they'll be able to pay those bills. These are specific questions we need answered by Exxon now, not later, now. While Exxon did a good job of getting the Exxon Valdez off of Bly Reef and moved into outside harbor on Naked Island, they had the grace of good weather to aid them. An important point to remember here is there is still over 1 million gallons of crude oil on that tanker, and it's mixed with a lot of seawater. As of yesterday, when I went on a flight, that tanker still didn't have a boom around it. It had a little boom attached to it, but there wasn't a boom around it, and neither was the bay boomed off. I didn't hear Mr. Irasi or Mr. Cornett address either of those issues at yesterday's press conference. We need to know what's happening, and we need to have that tanker boomed off and protected. There's been a lot of talk about the volume of oil that has moved on out of Prince William Sound and into the Gulf. That's true. But one thing that hasn't been addressed is that each day the oil that is in Prince William Sound mixes with water in an emulsion and increases in its volume by 50 to 75%. So daily, the mass of oil that we are left to clean up grows. This mass is still out there floating around, ready to hit any beach, any shore, with any change in the weather. We have to clean up the oil that's in Prince William Sound. We've taken a map to Exxon that shows the key salmon spawning streams and the key herring spawning beaches. They were very happy to receive that map, and they have been working off that map. However, it's time for some real action. We have clean salmon spawning streams that need to be boomed off now. We have bays full of oil that need to be boomed off before the weather changes and those bays contaminate the clean streams. If Exxon has to hire every boom manufacturer in the world and get them to work around the clock to produce the high-quality ocean boom that we need to do this, they should be doing this. And we don't need the little boom that basically is only good in a mill pond. We need real boom, and we need it now. Again, we haven't heard them address this issue. They say they have boom coming. What kind is it? Where is it, and when will it be deployed? We have hundreds of boats right now in Cordova that are waiting to take boom out and boom off these very valuable streams and to close off the bays full of oil. We're ready. Where's Exxon? The Cordova District Fishermen United has worked very hard on this spill. Our funds have been depleted, and we have currently spent $139,000 so far on this spill. Before this spill, we had one full-time employee. We now have seven full-time employees that are working at least 18 hours a day here in Valdez. We have 10 full-time employees in Cordova and five part-time employees in Cordova. And there is also a terrific number of volunteers that are giving their time without credit. There are going to be a lot of unsung heroes in this oil spill who are never acknowledged. We are now in the third week of this oil spill, and still most of the cleanup is on paper. We need cleanup in reality, and we need it now. Thank you.
Michelle Hahn O'Leary from the Cordova District Fishermen United. Now here's Heather McCarty again.
Now I'd like to introduce Mr. R.J. Kopchak. He's the vice mayor of the city of Cordova. He's a city council member. He's also a commercial fisherman. R.J.
Thank you. Spelled K-O-P-C-H-A-K. And first name Robert, second John, and everybody calls me R.J. And I have a little prepared thing. Before I read the prepared statement, just one other quick thing. Cordova, Alaska is all dressed up for the prom with no date. We've got 7 acres of landfill cleared, and we have all of the infrastructure required to provide the technical deployment of equipment, materials, and men that's still needed on this spill. The infrastructure is there. The command center is established. The lines of command are clear. Exxon senior officials, we're still waiting. We'd like a date. Okay, let me go into this. While some of Exxon's attention is focused on trying to clean the oil spill that has threatened one of America's most pristine environments, the people of Cordova sit and wonder where Exxon is. Where is Exxon when we need answers to our questions? To the best of our knowledge, the only non-technical Exxon representatives that are in Cordova are 3 or 4 claims representatives from Crawford Company, an Exxon subcontractor. They're not directly employed by the firm. To our knowledge, there's no corporate Exxon employee that's set up in a community relations position in Cordova to deal with our concerns and to answer our questions. Why is that? Is Exxon afraid of us? Are they afraid we might start asking questions, some tough questions, about the promises we've heard for the past 2 weeks? We called the press conference today to express our questions and concerns and recommendations, and to give you recommendations that to you, the news media and your audience, the Alaskan people and the American public. We also want to remind everyone that while we still share in the agony of the environmental destruction created by the accident, the greatest amount of human suffering will take place in Cordova, Alaska, as well as Chiniga Village and Tetitlik Village. We are the people who will hurt the most. With all due respect to our sister city, Valdez, the Cordova economy and lifestyle is supported entirely by the fisheries that may be ruined, and it will at least be impacted by the wreck of the Exxon Valdez. We don't have a pipeline in Cordova. We don't even have a road for tourists to drive in on. And judging from Exxon's multi-million dollar ad campaign apologizing to Valdez and not Cordovans, we don't even have respect. But we do have fish. And it is the threat of losing our fish that's scared us half to death. The following questions and recommendations are representative of the frustration and the fear that we feel as a community. They're not all in. The following questions and recommendations are representative of the frustration and the fear that we feel as a community. They're not all inclusive, but instead should set some tone. Number one, Exxon says it will clean our beaches. As a matter of fact, Mr. Iorossi or Mr. Cornett said that there'd be people out there with toothbrushes. They're going to need a lot of toothbrushes. When will they do it? Which ones? And how are they going to accomplish it? They still don't have a tactical plan. Shame on them. Will Exxon focus on creeks that spawn wild salmon first, or the ones that are easiest to reach by the boats, the TV cameras, and their own aerial survey crews? Does Exxon plan to get rid of the poison now, or sometime in June and July, which is in the middle of when our fish are returning? How about the hatcheries? If our fish can't be released into a productive environment at the proper time, which is critical to their survival, will Exxon mitigate our losses? Now, how about our business community? Will Exxon compensate the business people who are dependent on the fish income? And how about the cannery people who are not working? The seasonal workers who process and pack our fish? How about our crew members who aren't going out on the boats? The bartenders, the net menders who are here and have no work? The barber shops, or the school kids who pick up part-time change doing odds and ends and derive their income from the fisheries of the Sound? And if they're going to do that, how long? For a couple of months until you people are all out of the way so that they're not under the eye of the public? Or are they going to do it for the 10 years or more that it takes us to get back to the pre-March 24th, 1989? And what about the worldwide image of Alaskan seafood? The seafood we produce is going to be clean, and it won't hit the marketplace in any other than pristine condition. But is Exxon going to compensate our fish industry for the time and the money that it's going to take for us to assure the people of that and to restore our clean quality image that we've spent years and years and years building? They say they sent a letter, but will they deliver when push comes to shove? As you can see, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered in order to facilitate the process of having the questions answered and to create real action, not lip service. We recommend at least some of the following, and this is, again, not all-inclusive. Number one, Exxon should establish immediately a command center in Cordova, not a liaison office, a command center in Cordova, staffed by Exxon corporate employees so that they can talk with us, and not next week, but now. Exxon brags about 250 staff people in Cordova, in Valdez, and it wouldn't hurt to put some of those people in Cordova. Again, we're ready to help. We're simply waiting for a call so we can have a date. Exxon should conduct a daily town hall meeting with our citizens to personally tell us the status of the spill cleanup efforts, the damage, claim information, and other mitigating programs they hope to establish, because that's all we hear from them is how they hope to do this and that. Exxon should expedite advance payment of claims to individuals and companies that have suffered from the spill. These advance payments should in no way represent a final settlement to our people, nor should they eliminate the opportunity for our people to file a compensatory damage claim in the future. The town is suffering a major cash flow problem at this time. It should be fixed. Our herring season has been destroyed, and we have received no money in our town to help offset that. Nothing. Point four is Exxon must appoint a VIP task force that begins to develop a specific timeline and deadline for cleanup, restoration, and compensation. Again, we've heard their promises. We need to know when. And Exxon, again, should divide
their oil spill disaster purchasing process, at least somewhat, between Valdez and Cordova to help compensate for the financial losses felt by the Cordova merchants. Normally, these merchants are turning over hundreds of thousands of dollars in merchandise to the herring fleet and to the salmon fleet gearing up. Those fleets are not gearing up at this point because we're scared, and those merchants are going to start starving. They're worried and scared now. And in summary, if Cordova remains the forgotten town, which is what we seem to be now, we will be forced to galvanize the national support that's waiting to help mobilize the rest of America to help us defend ourselves, and we're going to be willing to do that. Thank you.
That was the Vice Mayor of Cordova, R.J. Kopchak. Here's Heather McCarty.
Same division of CDFU. Ken?
Yes, good morning, everyone. I'm also one of the vice presidents of CDFU. We have two of them. And I thank you for this moment in the sun. I've been thinking and dreaming of this moment for days. I would like to mention what my immediate involvement with CDFU has been and comment from my view in the office. I'm in the CDFU headquarters in Cordova. Michelle mentioned we have a staff. We have, I believe she mentioned, 10 full-time workers. We have 5 part-time workers. We have a Valdez staff representing CDFU also. I just want to mention that none of these people are professionals. They are fishermen, and they are fishermen's wives, and they are other very concerned people in our community. I wanted to say that the community is 100% behind us on this. People come in, they donate us food. We don't eat at home anymore. We grab sandwiches, you know, people bring plates of lasagna to the office. This is a grassroots response, is what I'm saying. Over the course of time that I've been involved in a decision-making processes in the Cordova office of CDFU, I get the feeling that we are in a situation which is certainly stressful, and it perhaps approximates a warlike situation. I'm called time and again to think about what must the colonists have been back in the 1700s when they proposed independence against the greatest nation in the country at the time. I think about the analogy of David and Goliath. I think about the outcome of Goliath. Against all odds, David prevailed. And yet I wonder if David ever really offered Goliath a chance. I don't know, we never hear that side of it. If our situation now, as concerned fishermen and townspeople of Cordova and Valdez, is analogous to David and Goliath, our situation is a little different, in that we can offer a choice to this superpower, which is Exxon. We can offer the possibility to take the chance that maybe somewhere down the line, maybe there's a chance that it would fall. The other choice I would offer is to change the character. I personally don't have any problem with giants. I personally don't have any problem with big multinational corporations if the character is good. It may sound a little funny, but I'm proposing that the character that Exxon take on is not one of Goliath, but one of the Jolly Green Giant. And I mean by that, particularly, a corporation that espouses concern for the environment, that takes on the color of green, that as part of their working modus operandum includes not only lip service, but action and concern for the environment. That's where I'm coming from. We've specified particular issues here before you this morning, points that need to be addressed. We are receiving lip service. And I know out there in America, there are concerned people, and we implore your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you all. Just one second. I have one last summary. Are you ready? Thank you all for this opportunity that we've all taken to express Cordova's point of view. Although the river of crude oil is slowly leaving the Sound, I think you've seen here that the anger, the grief, and the fear are not leaving the hearts of Cordovans. But also in our hearts is determination. Fishermen are a self-reliant lot, and we're determined that our new industry, the oil spill industry, is very soon displaced by our real industry, catching fish and reaping all the other rewards of our love and our care for Prince William Sound. Now I'll take questions from the floor. Address them to whoever you'd like.
Yes, Larry Scammer of the Los Angeles Times to Mr. Tsusimoto. And I might invite anyone else who would like to comment. We were informed today, members of the press corps here, that the sea boom down at Sawmill Bay is not what they thought it would be, that its skirt is not a 42-inch skirt, but more like a 24-inch skirt. I'd like you to comment on that. Furthermore, they also informed us today that a new oil slick is moving towards the hatchery at Esther Island, and it's about 5 miles away. They did not know that until late yesterday. Would you comment on those two bits of information?
First, the first question, you are correct. The oil boom that has been deployed out there, we received about 8,000 feet. We were expecting 15 to 16,000 feet out at the hatchery there at Sawmill Bay. It is smaller than we anticipated. We thought, as you said, it was going to be a 41-inch skirt. It is a 24-inch skirt on the boom there. We're trying right now, again, although we were promised, like I mentioned before, more oil boom, we're trying to obtain that extra 7,000 or 8,000 feet at the present time. As far as the second question, yes, I was just informed of that myself about the oil slick going towards Esther, and we have booms in place there also, but see, that's one of the big things right now is that if the weather deteriorates, we'd need the same type of oil booms that we have out at San Juan over at Esther. And like I said in my speech there, Esther is the largest hatchery in the world, and we have about three times as many fish there as we have out at San Juan.
Just one follow-up question, please. Will a 24-inch skirt do the job?
Under the present weather conditions, I think we're okay. But if the weather changes, then it's not what the spill specialists out there recommended.
Paula DePerna, the Cousteau Society. I'd like to follow up on this boom thing because we were told that was a 42-inch Navy boom. It may sound like belaboring the point, but I think this is a very good example of how things fall between the cracks. Is it a Navy boom? I mean, they announced that at a press conference. It's obviously not 42 inches, but is it coming from the Navy? I mean, where all of a sudden is this a totally different piece of equipment, or is it the piece of equipment that was announced incorrectly?
It's my understanding, that it is coming from the Navy or the Coast Guard. Like I mentioned earlier, we were promised a 41-inch skirted boom, and the one that arrived there was 24-inch. I do not know what happened. We did not make the arrangements to get that out there.
Just to follow up, also, you alluded to some money that Exxon provided the hatchery. Could you give us the amount of that money, please?
Yes. About a week ago, I came over to Valdez, and I talked to Don Coronet and Mr. Irasi, and they agreed to wire $1 million to us to help us protect the hatcheries. We've been spending a great amount of money, and to be real honest, that isn't enough right now. We'll be needing more because we're spending for us, incredible sums of money right now to protect those facilities.
Well, can I just follow on that? I mean, did they give you that million and say, go and do what you want with it, or do they intend to continue to supply you with any kind of, quote, technical backup? Because in a way, $1 million might sound like a lot, but if they don't, if you don't have any way of ordering, you don't even have a phone down there. As of yesterday, it was down. So if you can't order what you've got to spend the money on, you see what I'm getting at?
Sure. That money was to given to us basically just to pay for whatever we needed at the time. We were spending a lot of money on oil booms ourselves, on transportation, staffing, new skiffs, everything out there just to get the place protected. Now I've been given a verbal on this. If we need more money, they said they would supply it, but you know, I don't know.
Can you give us an estimate of how much Cordova has lost, the entire community, in revenue, jobs, wages, and what the potential is in the future?
Maybe one of the other gentlemen here could comment on that.
We've been listening to
I believe
Brian
the
Susumoto,
existential value of the herring catch is approximately $12 or $14 million. Now that's the raw catch would get to the hatchery. The processors. How do you figure out how it runs through the economy? Is it a 7-time turnover? I'm not sure what the accepted economic value is that, but money does roll through an economy and is passed back and forth. But it's a substantial loss to a small town of 2,500 people with a city budget of $3.3 million.
Bob Van Brocklin, a Cordova businessman.
National sentiment in your favor if necessary. What kind of actions are you talking about? Was it you? I'm sorry, sir. There were so many.
Here is R.J. Kopchak.
When I discussed the attempts or the attempts to communicate with Exxon had not been as fruitful as we wanted. We are now gathering together as any cornered animal would, and beginning to muster as much additional strength as we can identify. We are now in touch with and are having conversations with groups and organizations throughout the United States, and we are going to request their assistance in fighting the monster that is Exxon and/oil. Now, we've chosen Exxon to be the big scapegoat here, but the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company is right on there with them. And although the other oil companies have not been named, it was just Exxon's captain that it was this time. I don't think anybody else would have responded any differently. In the first 12 hours, I would hope that the other companies would have responded better. We don't know what to do. We're going to ask for help. We're going to ask the people to change laws and to change pressure and to make the law work for us. Exxon said it's going to help us out to the letter of the law. The letter of the law protects Exxon. Damn the bad luck. And we're not going to take that. We're going to ask people to help us change the law so that the letter of the law protects the people and protects the environment, not the stock dividends of the big corporation. And we're not anti-corporation, and I'm not a flaming environmentalist, but I sure am interested at this point in protecting my home and my children and my family against poisons. So that's what we're going to ask for.
Have you been in contact with Greenpeace?
I'm going to hesitate in responding directly to that and simply say that if you'd like to see the structure of our proposed national campaign, you're welcome to come down on Monday and meet with the people that are working on that in Cordova. Thanks.
Well, you're saying you're meeting with certain groups, but you're not saying which?
Yes, I could say that.
I'd like to ask a question to any one of you. For people that don't understand the fishery, let's just take the herring fishery. Could someone explain to us how many permits are given out for the herring fishery? And of those permits, how many of those are actually in and held by people that live in Cordova year-round?
I'll attempt to answer this. I mean, I don't have specific figures, but to give you a picture on how the herring industry works, there's three types. Okay, there's herring seining, herring pounding, and herring gill netting. Herring seining is a boat with approximately a 5-man crew. A lot of these permits are owned in Cordova. I'm not sure what percentage. They're owned in other places of Alaska. People in Seattle have them. The fleet usually moves to Sitka when they're finished with that fishery. They come in Cordova and they wait for the herring to become right to fish. I mean, it's an economic boom. The bay's full of floating processors. You have people on the processors. You have the fishermen there. They're waiting to go fishing. There's also the herring pounding, which is actually a pond in the water. And they hang kelp on strings. Usually, a lot of it's picked up in southeastern Alaska, transported. It's a real timing matter. They catch herring, put them in the pounds to have this perfect product. There's also some wild harvest where divers come up and dive for the wild harvest kelp. They won't be coming this year. Then there's a gillnet fleet. Actually goes out with it's usually a two-person boat, maybe three-person, and they gillnet this on quotas. So, I mean, it's a diverse industry. It's our first money of the year. It starts Cordova. Myself, personally, a gentleman asked what business I have. I have various businesses in Cordova. I have a laundromat, small motel, cocktail lounge. I lease space to other businesses. The largest day we've ever had a business has been during herring season. So, I mean, it's a major impact.
Would perhaps maybe the city manager be able to tell us what the medium income is then for the resident in Cordova?
No, I can't give that figure. I don't know what the median income is.
You're listening to a live press conference of members of the city of Cordova. Here's another question.
I may have missed it. I don't know. I came in a little bit late. From the city manager, is there a figure for the value of the fisheries of the Sound to the economy of Cordova? Including increased projections, I realize that that's a little, difficult, but including increased projections for catches and so forth, can you give us that figure?
It's about $70 million. When I gave that figure of the ninth largest fishing port in the world by value, I believe that's around $70 million. This was in 1987, and I think in 1988, the figures are out now. We actually moved up. The herring fishery is approximately $13 million.
And a follow-up question. If you had your choice, RJ said and all of you have said, no one knows how long the cleanup will take and how long the impact will last. And if you had your choice, if Exxon came to Cordova tomorrow and said, we will give you X amount of money and you can go away now, in other words, a large amount of money for the next 10 years, or would you rather set up something with them that you could deal with them on an annual basis until the end of this is in your eyes?
Well, there are several things that the whole fishery regime is, it cascades through the entire economy and through the years. The fish that Bruce is trying to protect this year at San Juan are our fish that we'll be catching 2 years from now. So and we won't know until then exactly what the effects of this are on them. If Exxon came to town and wanted to mount some type of long-term effort, what is the single most important thing I would say at this point to be addressing would be research. We need a significant scientific research and evaluation effort mounted to determine just what the effect of this is on the Prince William Sound and how long it's going to last. It needs to be tracked and evaluated through the years. And this isn't just for the benefit of Cordova. I think this would be of importance to the world.
I'd like to add something to that. If you take last year's confirmed value of just pink salmon in Prince William Sound, it was approximately $39 million for that one species. If you take Alaska Department of Fish and Game's estimate for this coming season, on the low end, now I might be a few million dollars off, but on the low end of their prediction, they're talking $60, $62 million for that species. The mid prediction is $103 million just for that one species. and the high end is approximately $150 million. This is the increase from last year in that economy, which would be spread over the fishermen in the whole area. I mean, the fish are coming back this year. We went through botulism. We've been through the earthquake. This was the year Cordova was not going to survive. They were going to succeed. And this is what we lost. That's just for the specie of pig salmon. Alaska Department of Fish and Game has those figures.
I wanted to make a correction. The 70 million figure that I gave is approximate for perhaps a salmon species. The total fishery is over $100 million for Prince William Sound.
That's City Manager Doug Moore. We also heard from Bob Van Brocklin. This is a live press conference by the City of Cordova and members of CDFU and PISWAC here in the Valdez Civic Center Auditorium.
Can I ask Michelle just a quickie? You said you had how many full-time and part-time workers in Cordova and Valdez?
This is Michelle Han O'Leary of CDFU.
We have 7 full-time in Valdez, 10 full-time in Cordova, full-time meaning basically around the clock, little sleep, little food, and 5 part-time, and a whole fleet of volunteer workers that we're not even counting. The figures I gave for the expenses of the CDFU office since this oil spill are completely conservative. They're very conservative estimates.
$139,000 or?
Yeah, that's what we spent so far. That doesn't project us ahead at all, and all our bills aren't in.
Could I ask, is anybody trying to sell permits off? I mean, given the fact that, is anybody trying?
When we sell a limited entry permit in Alaska, we file, and then we have with the state, and we have a 60-day waiting period. The state set that up so that we wouldn't act in haste. And I think everybody has a lot of faith in our fisheries, and we're waiting to see, but no one's selling their permits yet.
Thank you for coming. If you have any more specific questions for anyone, we'll be here for a while. Thank you very much.
That was Heather McCarty closing off this particular press conference. This under the auspices of the City of Cordova and CDFU and PISWAC. We heard from Heather McCarty, who is the moderator of CDFU, Don Moore, who is a city manager of Cordova, Bruce Tsuzumoto, who's the president of PISWAC, the Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation, Bob Van Brocklin, a business person in Cordova, Michelle Han O'Leary, chair of the Herring Pound Committee of CDFU, R.J. Kopchak. R.J. is the vice mayor of Cordova. He's on the city council. He's also a commercial fisherman. And we heard from Ken, and I missed Ken's last name, who is the vice president of CDFU and chair of the SANE division. And then again, Heather McCarty giving a closing remark. I think that the tone of this conference could be summarized by a statement that Don Moore, the city manager of Cordova, read from remarks that were given to the congressional hearings at which the mayor of Valdez, John Devens, was invited to testify. Don Moore, relating his message, was that Cordova is fearful of becoming the forgotten city. And throughout each of the speakers, I think, expressing their frustration at being apparently or evidently overlooked or forgotten, or their concerns not being given the priority that the economic impact that is happening to Cordova would seem to require. In a brief summary, Don Moore talking about the need for attention to be given to Cordova, the fact that Cordova has no additional industry. In fact, this point made by several of the speakers, that unlike Valdez, which certainly will have a badly impacted commercial fishery this summer, Valdez looking to also impacts, but also looking hopefully to its tourism and the continuation of the oil transportation industry for the local economy. In Cordova, the fishing is the only industry of real significant impact. And that point brought home today first by Don Moore, the city manager. Bruce Tsuzumoto, who's the president of PISWAC, gave a brief history of PISWAC and what they're doing, and the fact that the Esther Island hatchery, one of the protected areas, is the largest hatchery in the world with a production of over 300 million salmon fry each year. And all told, the hatcheries in Prince William Sound producing upwards of 750 million salmon eggs each season. I think the theme of Bruce Tsujimoto's remarks was that the response that has started is only the beginning, and that there will be response needs going on for months and months, perhaps years. Bob Van Brocklin, who is a retailer and owns several businesses in Cordova, reiterated the problem, or rather the idea that Cordova is a fishing community, and if there's no fish, there's no business, and talking about the concern and fears, chaos to some degree in the retail or commercial community, and a concern bringing a specific example of a problem in remuneration or compensation through the Exxon claims procedure. The example being cannery workers who worked last year on the herring fishery, who this year will not be hired. And that at present there is no compensation system in place for workers such as that. Michelle Hahn O'Leary is chair of the Herring Pound Committee of CDFU, brought out the point that fishermen are professionals in their field and they know the waters, currents, fish, and area conditions. And of the 110 boats in Exxon's Navy, 64 are seiners, 15 are gillnetters from Cordova, and that there are some 250 Cordovans working on the spill, but that to this point not one fisherman has been paid a dime in Cordova. They also raise concerns about the need for booms around the Exxon Valdez, now at anchor in Outside Bay on Naked Island. She also brought out the fact that CDFU has spent some $139,000 so far, perhaps conservatively estimated, and is definitely working overtime to go to respond to this. R.J. Kopchak, the vice mayor of Cordova, summarized his introduction with the line that Cordova is all dressed up and has no date, that Cordovans are ready and willing, in fact desperately ready, to work to protect their fishery, but have had difficulty in the communications, quite a bit of frustration being expressed.